morning we'll be finishing the fourth chapter of Daniel as we continue our way through the book of Daniel. And to begin with, I want to review a little bit about what has happened in this chapter. You remember Nebuchadnezzar has had a dream. And in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, he sees this huge tree that it grows very tall and very broad, and the tree is capable of providing sustenance for all the people in the world, for the animals can come and get shade under it and protection under its branches. Birds live in its branches. This is a great tree, magnificent tree that provides all these things. And then an angel, probably from heaven, comes down with a message from God. And the message is this: cut down the tree. Strip it, its branches off of it, cut its limbs off, destroy this tree, run away all of the birds, run away all of the beasts from under it. Its fruit will be scattered. This tree will be just destroyed, except leave the stump. And somewhere in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, it seems like that there is a transition or a merging of two things. Because originally the tree is referred to as a tree, an inanimate object, using the pronoun it. But somewhere halfway through there, Nebuchadnezzar, as he recounts this dream, begins to refer to this as a him. And it seems like that somewhere in there, in his dream, this thing changes from a tree to a man. And he sees this man eating grass like the beast of the field. He's outdoors, lives outdoors. The dew from heaven wets him every night. And he is an insane human being living as an animal. And for some reason, Nebuchadnezzar is filled with fear. And I suppose, this is just my guess, that the reason for this is that somewhere in this dream, Nebuchadnezzar begins to sense, and perhaps it's very clear to him, I don't know, but at least he begins to sense that this tree is him. And somewhere in there, when it changes to a man, he may recognize himself as this man who is living as a wild beast in the field. And perhaps that is the reason he is so fearful. And he calls Daniel, he's tried his other wise men and astrologers and magicians, and they can't tell him the meaning of the dream, or perhaps they're afraid to. But he comes to Daniel and asks Daniel to tell him. And Daniel is silent for a while. It says an hour. And that's a long time to wait for somebody to answer you. And so Daniel eventually tells him the interpretation of the dream. And I want to look at just a couple of things from last week's text in chapter 4, verse 20. Daniel says three things about what Nebuchadnezzar saw. And Daniel is explaining this to Nebuchadnezzar. You need to see really what Nebuchadnezzar hears here. Daniel tells him in verse 20, the tree that you saw, now I'm going to skip down to verse 22, it is you, O king. No ambiguity about this now, is there? Daniel has laid it out. Yes, the tree you saw is you, who have grown and become strong, verse 22, for your greatness has grown and reaches to the heavens, and your dominion to the end of the earth. So Daniel clearly tells him, the tree that you saw is you. The second thing that Daniel tells him is the watchman that you saw, or the watcher that you saw, this holy one coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree. This is in verse 23. You go down to verse 24. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my king. They shall drive you from men. Now, remember, Nebuchadnezzar is sitting here listening to this. They shall drive you from men Your dwelling shall be with the beast of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times, or most everyone concludes that 7 years, shall pass over you until you know the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. So first, Daniel tells him, the tree you saw is you. The watchman that you saw comes down from God with a decree that this is what's going to happen to you and describes it. And then the third thing he tells him is also remember the decree about the stump. Leave the stump and roots of the tree. Why? Because he tells him here, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. So he tells him, after this 7 year period is over, you will be restored as the king. So Nebuchadnezzar hears this. Now, I'm going to take a little side trip and talk about objections that people raise to this account and to this dream. First one is this, that some people say, some scholars and some biblical scholars, as a matter of fact, say this, that there is not a shred of evidence anywhere of this 7 year period of Nebuchadnezzar's insanity. And my first thought when I read that is, what do you call this? Right. Is this evidence or not evidence? You know, no one wants to consider the biblical account as part of the evidence. And just because something, if there is no other evidence other than this, so what? There are a lot of things that happened 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, that there's no evidence for. The second thing is this, that the reasoning goes, this wouldn't have happened, or at least he didn't get his kingdom back, even if it did, because that's not going to happen. If this king goes insane, there are all kinds of vultures wanting to be top dog to take his place. You see that in Burma. There are all kinds of military leaders who would jump at the chance to usurp control over the kingdom and over Babylon. So how do you answer that? Well, sure, that's possible. And it's more very likely that there are all kinds of people who do that. But what you're not taking into account is God. You remember as we went through the book of Exodus, there was a time where God told Moses to tell the men of Israel, at certain times of the year, you are to come to the tabernacle. All the men meet at the tabernacle to worship God. And the most obvious question that came to the people's mind is, what's going to happen to my farm or to my place or to my wife, to my children at this time that we're all gone? So here's this little community somewhere out in Israel, and all the men are gone. And the question becomes, our enemies, those who live outside our borders that perhaps we have just conquered, will take advantage of that opportunity to come in and raid our place. A natural thought that would come to your mind. What did God tell them? I like this reply of God. God said, here's what I'm going to do. At the time that they are gone, I'm going to see to it that your enemies do not want to do that. I'm going to give them no desire to come in and take your stuff. God can affect the desires of people. He said he would do it. Now here's Nebuchadnezzar, who is insane for 7 years. How is it that his kingdom goes on awaiting his return? Perhaps they don't know that he's coming back. But here is a kingdom with no king. A kingdom with an insane king living like a beast in the field. How is it that that doesn't happen? That no one comes in and takes over. What did God use to see that? First, he used his power to control the will of people. I think it's very likely that God used Daniel. Daniel was very high up in control of Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar's, we'd call him a general, advisors, counselors. It's very likely in my mind that God used Daniel to keep the kingdom and wait for it, to not desire to have this power of his own, but just to hold it until Nebuchadnezzar came back. So those are some objections that people have for that. But here's what I want to start with a thought, is what effect did this have, this interpretation of this dream have on Nebuchadnezzar? What would he think? What was he thinking? When Daniel tells him, Nebuchadnezzar, you're like this great tree, and God's fixing to cut you down. God's fixing to bring you down to size. You're going to be just like you are literally going to be an animal in the field, an animal in the forest, living as an animal. Your hair will be matted, you will be unwashed, unkept, living as an animal, as a beast. For 7 years. What would you do if you were Nebuchadnezzar and heard this, the most powerful man in the world, and you hear this? I don't know what I would do, but that's where we were at, where John left us off with last Sunday. Now this morning we're going to take it up in verse 29. Now verse 28 says, all this came upon Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 29, at the end of 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. There's a thought that I want to give you here about this at the end of 12 months. I want to kind of get you looking at this in this way by telling you a story of happened to me. When I was in the 11th grade through... No fault of my own, of course, but I was getting in trouble in school. And getting in trouble in this one particular class, in particular, shop class. And the man that was the shop teacher was just so fun to aggravate him and to do things. And that's where I was at. And pushing the envelope, doing as much as you could get away with. And the day came when we went too far. And I knew, I was convinced that the next day I was going to get called in the principal's office and get a whipping. And I just knew it. I mean, I had been threatened with it, and we were caught doing some stuff that's what should have happened. So the next day I come to school fully expecting to get called in. Didn't happen. Nothing was done. I was a model student that day. The next day, nothing happened. And the more days went by, the more I forgot my fear. The more I began to think, well, maybe nothing is going to happen. Maybe he wasn't serious. Maybe things are okay. And the more days went by, the more I slipped in to those old habits that I was so capable of doing. All the time, unaware that the principal and the teacher and my dad were setting a trap for me. I was being entrapped and set up to fall. They were giving me, and it may be today, but it wasn't then. They were giving me enough rope to hang myself, and hang myself I did. I think a similar thing perhaps is going on with Nebuchadnezzar here. He's heard this awful interpretation of his dream. And yet a week goes by, and he's not a wild beast in the field. He's still on the throne. 2 weeks go by, a month goes by, 6 months goes by, and I suppose somewhere in there Nebuchadnezzar perhaps begins to think, this is not going to happen. Daniel got it wrong this time. This was just a bad dream. A year goes by, and one day Nebuchadnezzar is in his royal palace. And we go on to verse 30. And it says this, the king spoke, he's in his royal palace, walking around, and he said, is not this great Babylon that I have built? This great Babylon. I want us to look just for a minute, and I've got this under number two. There are a lot of things about Babylon. Babylon, if you can, this is all from ancient historians that describe to us what Babylon was like. But Babylon was a city that was designed from beginning to end. Okay, Babylon was an ancient city. At the time Nebuchadnezzar is king here, the city itself was thousands of years old. But it had been destroyed on more than one occasion. And Nebuchadnezzar, when he builds this city, he designs the whole thing from the beginning. If you look at any town or any city, you can take Heber Springs or any city you're familiar with. I remember, we moved here in 1970, and I remember what Heber Springs was like. I knew the size of it. I knew the streets that were built up. I knew the subdivisions that were there, the subdivisions that were not. And over the last, how many years is that, 50 years or so that I've been around here, the growth has come a little here and a little there. You expect the growth to be here, but no, it's over here. And so it's just kind of hit and miss, kind of pots together of how the thing grows. There's no master plan for something to go from 3,000 people, say, to 20,000 people. It just kind of happens. And that's the way practically every city is. But not Babylon. It was designed to the end from the very beginning. Now notice some things about this. It was financed with the treasures of many conquered nations. Nebuchadnezzar never lost a battle. Nebuchadnezzar hauled home millions and millions of dollars worth of loot, gold, precious stone, precious things. He carried home thousands, hundreds of thousands of slaves, nations that he had conquered. They didn't leave the people there. They displaced them with the idea of totally destroying their national heritage. Many of these people died on the way to Babylon. But the ones that survived, Nebuchadnezzar had hundreds of thousands of slaves to build the city. Now look at this city. It's a square city. I want to use the word perfectly square, but it probably wasn't perfect. But it was built square. 15 miles on each side. Y'all know how big 15 miles is. If you were to look around here, I looked this up on a county map just to kind of give us an idea. If the northeast corner of this city was Drasco, and you head due west for 15 miles, you'll come to approximately Edgemont, approximately where Tim and Deb live. That's about 15 miles. If you turn due south and go 15 miles, you'll be close to Quitman. You turn due east again and go 15 miles, you'll be close to my house, in Pine Snap. And then you turn due north, you're back to Drasco. So you see the area. This is Babylon, designed from the beginning. This city had a wall built around it, 350 feet high. 60 miles of 350 feet high a wall that is 87 feet across on the top. They could race six chariots abreast with one another on top of this wall. This is a magnificent wall. Other things. The Euphrates River runs diagonally through it. There are 100 gates that pierce this wall in different places to give you access to the city. The gates were made of burnished bronze. And in the sunlight, it is said that they look like liquid fire, shining on probably inside and out. One of Nebuchadnezzar's palaces that has been excavated covered 11 acres. That's one palace, 11 acres. Within this palace was an elaborate banquet hall, adorned with gold and silver, with a great plastered wall that one day soon God will use as a billboard to write a message. Around the city or in the city, there are walls that are made from multicolored tiles. It's kind of hard to, even nowadays, I suppose, to make rocks different colors. But it's simple matter to make a tile that you bake and put colors in tiles. Someone has said that, and I've never been to Bangkok, but someone has said that there is about a 10 or 12 block, city block, I suppose they meant, area of temples that are a fabulous multicolored tiles that the things are just gorgeous. That's 10 or 12 city blocks. Nebuchadnezzar had such a thing that stretched miles and miles miles inside the city. The tiles were made and put up to portray, just like a mural, we would call them murals, that are dozens of feet high and miles long. A magnificent place. Can you imagine this beauty of this place? One of their Perhaps, I don't know if it was the main one or not, but one of their altars that they worshipped was at the top of a 600-foot tower. Was a golden, solid gold statue of some kind, and that was of 800, I believe it said, talents of gold. One talent is all of the gold an able-bodied man can carry. 800 talents of gold, the top of a 600-foot monument, to build an altar to worship some god. Nebuchadnezzar is standing on the top of his wall, perhaps walking back and forth, looking at this glorious city. Nebuchadnezzar says, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built?" I'll tell you another little story. A couple weeks ago, Daniel and I were pouring a concrete slab over at what we call the farm. And actually, we weren't pouring. But you knew what I meant when I said that, I think. We were watching being poured. And we did a little work. I had to give all the credit I can take for something, you know. But we were there, and my phone rang. And it was Luke Riley. And at the time that my phone rang, I was kind of propped back against this little retaining wall, just sitting there watching. My phone rang, and it was Luke. And I said, "Hello." And then Luke said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm pouring some concrete." When I said that, Daniel was over actually doing a little bit of something, and I noticed Daniel look over at me and grin. And I know exactly what he's thinking. And as soon as I got off the phone, Daniel said, "So you're pouring concrete, huh?" And the concrete finisher said, "Yeah, I kind of picked up on that too." I wasn't really poor to conquer. But we use those phrases like that. Someone may ask you, did y'all get a place in here? Say, well, we built a house. Yeah. You know, some 90-year-old couple says, uses terms like, we built a house on the lake. Well, they didn't build the house, right? But we know what they mean. Okay, the issue here with Nebuchadnezzar, he says, is this not the great Babylon that I have built? Now, I don't think he meant he built it. I think he means, he understands he had it built, hundreds of thousands of slaves built all of this city. That's not what he means. He goes on, and he says, it is built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power, for my majesty. The issue here is not who built it. The issue here is not its unmatched splendor. It has been said by multiple people who are historians and know this stuff that there has never been a city like this in the world, then or now. I'm sure there are many cities who are 15 miles square or bigger, but not this with this glorious beauty. But that's not the issue. The issue is that Nebuchadnezzar has done all this, and he looks at it and he says, this is a great Babylon that I have built by my mighty power for my majesty, and it is perhaps approaching a city, a place that is fitting for someone like me. Nebuchadnezzar was sure that there was something more glorious than the city, and it was him. So what happens? See in verse 31, while the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. They shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. Thou shalt make you eat grass like oxen, and 7 times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the heaven of men, in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomever he chooses. That very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. A whole year has passed, and Nebuchadnezzar has kind of forgot all about this. It's in the back corners of his mind. He probably thinks about it occasionally, but he's lost his fear of what is going to happen, of this interpretation of this dream. And suddenly, it falls. Suddenly, it comes upon him. And for what reason? For his pride. Now, that seems like a little harsh, doesn't it? You would think that God would bring his judgment upon vile, wicked, depraved men who kill millions and millions of people, perhaps like Hitler or Stalin or some of these other guys. I can see that. But just because the guy has a big ego, you strike him insane for 7 years? I think that the fact that we question that, or maybe you don't question it, the fact that I question the punishment fitting the crime here shows me, ought to show me, that I misunderstand and do not value the glory of God like I should. And I don't see the danger and the foolishness and the ridicule or the stupidity of me thinking so highly of myself. You know, in every town, I believe, and I don't know this, but even in a small place like Heber Springs, you can find men who really, really are filled with themselves. They may have some property, and they may have a lot of property. And they may have, you know, who knows? They may have 500 acres. Or they may have, you know, 30 houses. And they look at themselves in the mirror every morning and they think, look who I am. They don't tell you that. They don't tell you they think that. But inside, they are filled with themselves. You know how insignificant 500 acres is? I wouldn't mind having it, just kind of seeing what it felt like. Right? Do you know how insignificant it is to own a lot of property? Do you know how insignificant it is in view of eternity to have millions of dollars in a bank account somewhere? In contrast with God and all of creation and God's glory, it is nothing. But we have it. And we think, I have arrived. I'm important. And if the waiter or the waitress doesn't do things just right, I show them by my demeanor or by my words just how important I am. There are people like that in every walk of life, in every place, who think of themselves. Now, there are people who have nothing, but they have the same problem. They understand what the consequences of their behaviors are, but by golly, they are not going to change. I will not do it. Pride is an awful thing. All of us have it to some extent. Deal with it perhaps in varying degrees of severity. We use the word pride and proud in a way that we think it's a virtue. My grandkids come up here and sing when Kathy has the thing, and man, they quote this verse, and Papa kind of swells out a little bit. We say, I'm proud of them. Now, supposedly, we don't mean anything awful by that. But, man, you got to be careful. You've got to be careful. You're walking a razor's edge. You don't have to be Nebuchadnezzar to have the same issue. God's judgment fell upon Nebuchadnezzar swiftly. Perhaps not as soon as it could have, but when God got ready, he came down. The scripture says over and over and over again, God resists the proud. But God gives grace to the humble. The opposites are pride and humility. God resists the proud. How is it? What happens when a proud person is resisted by God? How does he bring him low? It's a form of that word, humble or humility. God humiliates them. Humiliates them. Can you envision Nebuchadnezzar being humiliated by crawling around or walking around in the forest or in the fields, eating grass, his fingernails, the text tells his fingernails grow long like in birds or eagles. His hair is unkempt and matted. I wonder if people came just to look at him, just to see. I don't know. I suspect Daniel was kind of keeping an eye on him, don't you think so? Mm-hmm. Daniel was a great man. Humble man. Verse 33, that very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Now from verse 33 back through verse 19, this is an account given by Daniel. We saw in the first 18 verses, Nebuchadnezzar himself is recounting this. If Nebuchadnezzar, you might could say, wrote the first 18 verses of Daniel chapter 4. And then verse 34 through the end of the chapter, verse 37, again, Nebuchadnezzar is speaking. Nebuchadnezzar is giving his account of this. So let's look at it. And I want to ask you this question, and this is not a perhaps more a trivia question than anything, but it's something that is always brought up, and we've talked about it a couple weeks ago. Did Nebuchadnezzar become a believer? Did he humble himself before God and submit his life to God? Okay? Just keep that question in your mind as we read this. At the end of the time, verse 34, I, Nebuchadnezzar, so Nebuchadnezzar's doing the talking, Nebuchadnezzar's giving us the count, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me. Now, how is it that this insane person can suddenly look to heaven and acknowledge God's sovereignty over his life? Does he have to become sane first? Or it reads as if his sanity returned because he had acknowledged God. Okay, I don't have the answer to that, but God can handle it. Okay? God can give Nebuchadnezzar a moment of clarity where he said, what a fool have I been? What a fool am I? But he looks to heaven. He says, I look to heaven and I blessed the Most High, my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. Notice the things that Nebuchadnezzar says about God. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion. Nebuchadnezzar already said that once. We saw that earlier. And his kingdom is from generation to generation. He's already said that once. We saw that earlier. Verse 35, all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. Now there's perhaps a new thought. All the people of the earth are as nothing before God, including kings, including me, Nebuchadnezzar. He does according to his will in the army of heaven. You believe that? God does according to his will in the armies of heaven. God is not bound by my decisions. God's hands are not tied by my activity. God's hands are not tied by my sin, my disobedience, my rebellion. God can still do, and he will still do, all his will. He does according to his will, he says, in the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth. There is no one who can restrain his hand or say to him, what are you doing? What have you done? There is nobody who can look to God and challenge God with this question. God, what are you doing? Do you see the foolishness of that question? Yet, how often we wonder, what is God doing? Verse 36. At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted to me. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. So Nebuchadnezzar gives us the report that at the end of that time, somehow his counselors, I suppose, and I would not doubt a bit that Daniel has been marking the days off. Daniel knows the time. Daniel's keeping an eye on things. When the time comes, these people who are Nebuchadnezzar's counselors come to him and restore him to his position. Verse 37, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways justice. Those who walk in pride, he is able to put down. That last sentence kind of says it for him, doesn't it? He has learned that. Those who walk in pride, God is able to put down. We have come to the end of four chapters in the book of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar has been on the throne. At the beginning of the book of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar, I think, if I remember correctly, was in his second year of his reign. Now, he's near the end of a 40 or so year reign. We saw three or four events that happened through his life that didn't tell everything. Some things that happened at the beginning, and some things who are now happening at the end of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. Nebuchadnezzar was about 20 years old or so when he came to the throne. And now he's 55 or 60 or 65 years old. Incidentally, it seems as if, look at the years stuff, that he is maybe 5 to 10 years older than Daniel. They're fairly close to the same age. A year or two from now, Nebuchadnezzar will be gone. He's restored to his throne. Now he's gone. Most everyone says there's no record of him dying a violent death, not in war or anything like that. We saw before that Nebuchadnezzar seemed to have been at ease in his palace before he had this last dream. Seems like his fighting days, his conquering days are over. He has built his great city, and now he's just enjoying life and thinking highly of himself. But that is ended. Nebuchadnezzar perhaps dies a natural death. We don't know. It's interesting that Isaiah the prophet prophesied of the destruction of Babylon. Prophesied that it would be destroyed, that it would be laid waste. This great city, laid waste. He prophesied that that would happen 100 years before Nebuchadnezzar was ever born. Jeremiah prophesied that it would happen during Nebuchadnezzar's life. There's an archaeologist, I can't remember his name, but in the 1840s, he wrote an account of his work in Babylon. He said that they could dig down and find all these things. But he said the wild animals, jackals, that were fearful of men and all these kinds of things lived around in that area, said that it was just a wasteland. They uncovered thousands and thousands of bits and pieces of glassware, pottery, iron things, things that were obviously used for building, and yet it is a wasteland. Nebuchadnezzar, his life is over. Next week, as we continue our work through Nebuchadnezzar or through the book of Daniel, he will be gone. Someone will take his place. But Daniel continues. Daniel has another 20 or 30 years of work still to do in God's kingdom. Let's pray. Father, we are so prone ourselves to not just like good things, But to think that we deserve them, to think that they ought to be ours because of who we are. God, our haughty spirits can take many forms. God, you know how to bring us low. God, would you help us to be humble? God, help us not to look at our fellow human beings and think of ourselves as better than others. God, is more important than others, as deserving of glory. God, give us a heart that loves you and longs for you, and God sees your glory and sees the insignificance of our accomplishments compared with eternity. Lord, help us to give our lives to glorifying your name and yourself. Amen.